is CIOI, Hamilton's home for alternative. Indy 101.5 FM.
All right. Hey, everybody. This is Sarah Jessica, and thanks for joining. This is my radio show, Hot Shots on Air, where I interview Canadian musicians, artists, and entertainment industry professionals. And tonight I'm hanging out with Keith Mosfett. He's a Canadian alt-rock singer-songwriter currently living in the Netherlands. You can find Keith online at Keith Mosfett and on all streaming services under the same name. So, hey, Keith.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a little bit sunburnt. It's a little bit later for me. I spent the day at the beach, hanging out, went some skateboarding and stuff, and drank a few beers, and it was a very lovely day for me. How was your
Absolutely.
Day?
Yeah, great way to enjoy your summer, for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely a really nice summer here.
Beautiful, beautiful. So just to kind of introduce you to everybody listening, how would you describe your sound and style as a musician?
Oh man, my sound and style, I'm very song dependent. So I have some songs that I think are very, kind of acoustic driven a little bit. Mm-hmm. I'm always mixing different genres and stuff. So I always get this a bit of a punk edge to me quite often, but it's just because I like to mix things. I have my attitude, and I ultimately just want to make interesting art and try to push where music could go. Some of my music I think is like kind of post-punk sounding, so you could say like some like Manchester Joy Division type stuff. Then I go right to like the 90s. I do like Hive style. It's all an evolving thing with me, and I'm constantly writing and releasing, and I've been doing that for several years now.
Well, cool. So who would you say are your biggest musical influences?
For me, I listen to a lot of different music, so I'm often like, it depends on the song. So recently, I've been very much back into the 90s. I'm listening to I'm listening to a lot of the Vines. Well, 2000s, I guess. The Vines and like the Hives. And like then like, for some reason, Nirvana was speaking to me and like Blur. But this is like a very recent thing. And so I'm going to record another album, right? I'm going to start recording an album in about a week or so. And I have all these very like, 90s, 2000s type songs that I'm inspired by, I've been writing. But I grew up with like the Kinks a lot, and like Rolling Stones, and lots of like the Smiths, and that was everything I loved as a child. But yeah, right now I'm like really in like a 90s phase.
Totally, yeah. And what would you say you take from them? Like their sound and style, their production, their stage presence? What would you say?
Probably not stage presence. That's like, I'd kind of just do what I feel is right at the time. But right now, when it comes to like 90s stuff, I'm really interested in the loud, quiet stuff. Mm-hmm. I feel a bit of there's a renaissance with that happening in the world. I'm writing the songs that's like, yeah, I can put a fuzz pedal on when it like comes to the chorus, and I can turn it off when it's not, and it's makes an interesting tonal shift, you know? It's all about the tonal shifts and the mood shifts between choruses and verses, and that's something I'm into at this moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you remember what you listened to as a kid? You know, what your family played around your house growing up, and what kind of impact do you believe that has on your personal style?
So I grew up with my, parents who were, my dad is from Scotland and he moved from Scotland to Canada when he was 20. My mom's parents are from Ireland. So I have an Irish passport, which is how I live in Europe. And I grew up with a lot of Celtic music when I was quite young. I learned the bagpipes when I was 8. But really, like I grew up with some Celtic music when I was really young. Then rock music really hit me hard when I was like 10 or 11. But I remember the very first song that ever stuck in my head was by the Rolling Stones. It was like, what was it? It was something about fire. I can't remember off the top of my head. But there's this Rolling Stones song. I remember being like in second grade. Like that song really hit me hard. Yeah.
Oh, what was the first time that you listened to a piece of music and thought, wow, I wish I made that? I find that a lot of musicians hear a piece of music, you know, whether it's a song or an album or an artist, and it really moves them in a way. And that's what kind of inspires them to create music themselves. Did you have a moment like that?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely have several moments like that. When I think of modern music, so I think there's a lot of problems, and if we want to, with the music industry, like there's like a oversaturation of music right now. Mm-hmm. The problem is it's really easy to record and make music. It's very easy, and so if you look at like the Spotify statistics, and a lot of people are listening to older music because people kind of cared and they made this music with care, and it. Right now, it's like you can get a sample pack and make a song, right? People don't care as much. They would rather release consistent content instead of making something that's absolutely beautiful and amazing. But if I was going to say a song I really wish I wrote, I think like Jitbug, Lightning Bolt. For whatever reason, I feel like I could have written that song. Like, mm-hmm. I couldn't. That's very arrogant. I wish I could have written a song like that when I was a teenager, because mm-hmm. it's absolutely incredible. And like that whole first album, I sometimes listen like, man, I wish I was quite as good as that at that age. It's yeah, very special.
Yes. And how did you first get into playing music? Did you start on an instrument? Did you start with your vocals? What started there?
For me, I started bagpipes when I was 8. It was just something that my grandparents did. Both my grandparents played bagpipes. Well, my grandfather, my dad's father played bagpipes. My mom's father played Innis pipes, which is the Irish version. They're smaller. Mm-hmm. They sound better. It's what you actually usually hear in movies. Bagpipes aren't the best sounding instrument. Mm-hmm. My mom's father, he was a wickedly mean guy, but he was a fantastic artist. I have some great memories of him playing chromatic harmonica, and he was a mm-hmm. multi-instrumental player.
Cool.
Yeah, and then like my brother played in punk bands, and then I played in his punk bands. So yeah, I was a teenager at 13, or I was a teenager like 14, 15 years old, and playing in bars and stuff in Brantford.
Wow, nice.
So, yeah, that's where I grew up a bit.
Yeah. Are there any instruments that you don't currently play that you'd like to learn?
Ooh, I've been really. Like I wish I could like just spend a month playing keyboard or piano. Mm-hmm. I have this like inkling. Like I wish sometimes I see people play piano. I'm like, oh, I hear it, what I want to do. But if I can just spend a month of just me in a piano, I know I can figure it out what I want. So yeah piano.
Yeah, cool. Were you confident from the get-go when you started performing and playing? And if not, when did that confidence begin and how was that journey for you?
Absolutely not confident at all. I first time I ever played was I was probably 13 in front of a coffee house at high school. Yeah. When did that confidence come? Probably when I felt some confidence. If you remember those like Hamilton Music Awards, I won one of those in like an old band. And I did a bunch of, like, I even was interviewed on Mohawk Radio like 6 years ago. I think I had some confidence from that. And then I lost my confidence. And then I kind of started doing my own thing. And I have a certain amount of confidence, but I don't want to come off as arrogant because I don't like arrogant artists. So I want to be confident, but it's not overconfident because I just ultimately want to make interesting pieces of art.
Yeah, totally. Did you go to school for music or take lessons?
I did not. I went to Mohawk, though, and I studied electronic engineering.
Nice.
And then I volunteered in a Threshold, which is like a studio there. And then I took like an online course, and I already had all the electrical principle stuff down. And then I took some courses on mixing, and I did a lot of that myself. And then I started volunteering, and yeah, that's how I started releasing my own music.
Oh, cool. Did you just say that you took a course in music?
Yeah, I took like a online Udemy type course.
Okay.
Like how to use Studio One, right?
Right.
And then I volunteered in studios. And but for like if you read like the documentation on how to use compression or how to use reverb, it's all just like electrical principles. And I studied electronic engineering. So
right. Right. That helped. How was your time working within studios, and what did you feel you learned from that experience?
Organization, how to use the least amount of processing for the most amount of work. It's basically like how do I use one reverb across many channels and like do the least amount of work to get the most amount of effort kind of thing. Yes. And then also how to do proper mic placements. I learned a lot of that. How to get a good sound out of a drum kit. Like, what is a good sound? What's a desirable thing? And then like, how do you do a gated reverb on a drum, on a snare or something? Like, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you feel as though that experience helped you creating your own music?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Cause like, when we were trying to create certain sounds, I would listen to music. I want to have this snare sound. How do I get that snare sound? We're in the studio, and then explaining the process, how to get to that snare sound. Mm-hmm. And then it's always very logical, and yeah, it's formulaic. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, what do you think was the most important lesson that you took away from, the course that you took online, from working in studios, all that sort of music prep before creating your own music?
Oh, the most important lesson was to follow my ears and my intuition. I think in general with music, if you go to school for jazz, for example, I remember going to school with several jazz musicians at Mohawk or at McMaster, and they were extremely, extremely arrogant, and they thought they would how long is it gonna take me to become famous? What, 3-4 months? Like, what I learned was to cool your arrogance and just make interesting art. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a good tip.
Pro tip right there.
Mm-hmm. When did you start creating your own music as opposed to learning other people's songs?
Ooh, I started writing music when I was 11 or 12. I started off with poetry, and then I was just trying to compose my terrible poetry into something, writing silly love songs for girls. That's what it was. I think I actually released like an indie emo type acoustic album when I was like 15, in 2005. I guess I'm that old. And I was like I was on like my brother's punk band called Kirby Set Sail, which was a pirate themed punk band, and we dressed up as pirates and played shows as pirates, and all the songs were about drinking rum and sailing the seas, and I played guitar because I knew the pentatonic. I knew the pentatonic scale. So he plays lead guitar. He knows some licks. So that's what it was.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember any of those early songs that you wrote?
I do. I remember. Yeah. A couple of them are pretty good. I'm like, ooh, like, I'm like, if I ever really need a song, I have like a, if I'm ever desperate for a song for an album, I have a huge list of songs. You know, I could probably bring that one back if I really need to. Actually, the song Uneasy, which is a track that I released recently, that's a song I wrote like four or five years ago. Mm-hmm. I think I wrote that in like 2017. And it was like after a breakup type thing. And I wrote that song, 2017. And I never intended to record it. And then I moved to Netherlands and I formed this band. All of a sudden people wanted to play with me. And I had this group and I was like, what song do you like? They liked my set already, all the songs I released. And they're like, oh, we got to record our own stuff. We got to record some new stuff. And I was like, what songs do I have? And I pulled this song out of like the hat, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the song that I released like a day ago. So yeah.
Awesome. When did you begin to look at music as something more than a hobby?
When I was 12, it was, for me, it was, I had a speech impediment growing up. So it was always really hard for me to communicate with people. Mm-hmm. And I spent a lot of my time in my own head. And then all of a sudden I started playing guitar and people started paying attention to me and it felt good. And I found a way to express myself, and I found this way to express myself that people understood. And then all of a sudden I went from like this quiet thing in the corner to a thing that someone would talk to, and that's all I really wanted as a kid.
Yeah. How did you approach singing as growing up with a speech impediment? Did that take speech therapy?
I was in speech therapy for many years. Actually, I had a speech impediment till I was about 12. And then singing was like, it's all learning. A lot of it is just memorization for me, and then figuring out your own voice. And yeah. And so I think the speech therapy helped me a lot with the way I learned to sing, because cool. I would record myself and then try to be as articulate as I could be. And then I learned to sing, like, what do I sound like? What's my natural voice? What sounds good? What doesn't sound good? And then I took some singing lessons and it kind of put me in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. I was actually in speech therapy as well as a kid for a speech impediment. So I understand that.
What was your speech impediment?
I think it had to do with, I don't completely remember because it was when I was young. Mm-hmm. And I haven't spoke to my mom about it in a while, but I think it had to do with certain letters, like W's and stuff. Yeah. I think it was something around that. I'd have to talk to her again about it.
Should revisit that a little bit for me. Yeah. So if I'm ever drinking too much, I have my speech impediment comes out again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have a lisp and I can't say Q words.
Mm-hmm.
Q? So Q, ending with Q. I would say queen. Especially in queen, I said queen. I always mix up Q's with P's. And then I had a lisp as well. And the irony is, like, when you say lisp, it's like, it's one of those words where if you have a lisp, you can't say lisp.
And you just change the word.
I think it's one of those descriptive type words. Like a tongue twister is a tongue twister.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I totally understand that journey. So I think that's really impressive that, you know, you took something that was an insecurity and you turned it into a talent. It was right.
Yeah. It was many years of practicing and I ultimately just wanted to find a way to express myself. And I think I did.
I think you did as well. Absolutely.
Thank you.
When did you join your first band or begin performing as a solo artist?
My first band, 14, 15, I played my brother's band. It was that pirate punk themed band. Mm-hmm. Everyone was 3-4 years older than me, trying to corrupt me, going to shows. And it was, very crazy. But then like when I went solo was after my band, when I was in Hamilton, I went through a huge phase. My brother had passed away and I just, everything in my life changed at that moment, and I wanted to just like make art and not be limited by the type of, I was playing with people that I felt limited me, and I just wanted to create art and not think about it. And so I started volunteering in studios, and I just started doing it all on my own. And then a lot of my band, some of my previous band members started playing with me, and I had other people come in, and I just wanted to create art. And yeah, I went solo around, it was 2018, 2017.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the first time you performed on a stage, like maybe with your brother's band, and how that felt for you?
I was 13 at Coffee House at Assumption in Brantford. Mm-hmm. It was my high school. And yeah, I played two songs, and I played a cover song called Violent Femmes, or by Violent Femmes, called Blister in the Sun. Do you know that mm-hmm. song?
Yes.
Do, 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 do. And everyone clapped. And yeah, I got the whole school to clap with that. And I was like in the ninth grade. And that was a good feeling. I played two songs. One was written, one, and that was a cover.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel like a rock star?
I was so happy people did it. mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How were your nerves up on that stage as like a 13-year-old?
Terrified.
Yeah.
Absolutely terrified. And I did it on my own. And I played like acoustic guitar through an amplifier. So it probably sounded terrible. Mm-hmm. But people clapped and they did the clap part. And like, that felt really good. And it felt good enough for me to keep doing it.
Yeah. It was successful.
It was successful.
How did your family and friends react to you pursuing music?
It was just something I did naturally, and I've always kind of done it. So it was never like you're making this big decision to pursue music. It was just like, that's something I would spontaneously do anyways. I could pick up a guitar and write a song about any moment. Mm-hmm. I could write a song about you in this moment. It's just the chords fall out of me, and I'm half the time I'm joking when I'm doing it. So that becomes a song somehow. Yeah. Not a shock. But it's not a shock.
Totally. Did you get any pushback from, I mean, maybe especially family members who kind of looked at that as, you know, oh, you're not going to make any money as a musician, you know? Did you get that
feedback? Oh, of course. Of course. My dad hated that I played guitar. and now he's super pro into it. You play all, like all over Europe. It's cool. But it's like, But when I was younger, he's like, you should be building your own guitar pedals and selling things this way. And he didn't understand not everything is like this capitalistic dream type thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need to create art for the sake of art and not try to sell and be on the first soda company you can think of. Like,
what was the music scene like in your hometown growing up?
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. I saw the Arcade Fire play when I was 12 years old, and there's more of them in the band than there was of us in the audience.
Yeah.
And that was the first show I ever went to at a place called the Ford Plant. I saw Born Ruffians there. I saw so many, like Tokyo Police Club played there. I saw many incredible bands that I didn't realize were incredible until I was older. I didn't realize how incredible that scene was until I was older. And then I moved to Hamilton, and then I realized the scene was good. Like this, we had this like weird special moment in Brantford for like 8 years, and I happened to be a teenager for that.
Yeah. And now that, you know, you live in Amsterdam, what's that music scene like, and how would you compare?
I absolutely love the music scene here. There's like this really special kind of like garage rock punk scene here. And you just feel this energy of people, like it's post-COVID, people want to play again. I'm not even from here, and I'm playing shows for like 200 people somehow. Mm-hmm. And I guess I have some fan base here and some friends and stuff, but there's something special happening here. It's very, if you've ever been to like England, there's a lot of like really big shows there. But Netherlands is like, there's some really special, interesting shows happening here. And you can feel the energy that's happening. Yeah.
And what made you choose to move to Amsterdam?
For me, I play like psychedelic garage rock music. I lived in Toronto for 5 years and I didn't really vibe there. I didn't have too many friends. I had a lot of friends in Hamilton. I missed them. It didn't really work.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got an Irish passport through my grandparents and I had the opportunity to move to Europe and they paid me money to move to Amsterdam and I liked Amsterdam and then it just worked. Everything kind of like was serendipity for me with Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. I moved here. All of a sudden I had a lot of friends. I started playing shows here and things blew up, like just started blowing up for me mm-hmm. here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, what do you think could be improved about the Amsterdam music scene?
What could be improved? I don't know. It's a really good scene. It just needs to grow and foster and have that kind of healthy, good growth. You mm-hmm. know, I found mm-hmm. like when I lived in Hamilton, it was like Hamilton is supposed to be a music city. And then the moment it said Hamilton is a music city, it was like, who, what's a corporation we can sell it to quickly, the quickest? Like the moment yeah. Gord Downie said that, everything went downhill. That's what it felt like when I lived in Hamilton. Like the moment Gord Downie said that, it was no longer a good music scene in Hamilton. Or it started not, it lost its specialness. There was a cool garage rock scene in Hamilton for a long time. And I feel I'm pessimistic about it. I felt like it kind of died a lot. I don't know what it is now because I haven't lived there in 2 years or like a lot, like 7 years I haven't lived there, but I felt like it died a bit. And yeah, with Amsterdam, it's vibrant, it's strong, it's growing, and they care about music. They mm-hmm. care about art more than I felt like Canadians cared about art.
Mm-hmm. And who are some talented local artists? And I guess you can plug Amsterdam artists, but also maybe like Hamilton,
I'm going to plug Thomas Duxbury and Charles Costash, my old bandmates, fantastic dudes. Definitely those two. And then, oh my God, what's in that band? There was Pet Sounds, but they're not Pet Sounds anymore. I'm trying to remember the name, the new name. I'll plug Thomas and then I'll plug my friends, my friends in Dear Omens here in Amsterdam.
Amazing. Okay. And if you could collaborate with any artist and like you can go big on this one, who would you choose?
Oh, you know what? I think I would vibe with Cage the Elephant. That's like a modern type band who understand like what it is to pull from older music, but also make something kind of modern and interesting sounding and create interesting art. They have so many different types of songs. I would vibe with Cage the Elephant. Yeah.
Amazing. And who is someone local to you that you'd love to work on a song with?
Local to me? I don't know. I generally like, I get to work with most people locally who I want to work with. There's mm-hmm. no one super special. Like everyone, the bands I plugged, like I've worked with.
Sure. Is there anyone left?
Is there anyone left? It probably is, but like I'm looking for someone. I'm looking mm-hmm. for the right person. I have this song idea. It's like, imagine like a kind of a more punk version of Arcade Fire. I have this like song that's very like Arcade Fire-esque, a little bit more post-punk, but I need to find the right person to play violin on it. I feel like it needs a violin and it's like this like very special
mm-hmm.
rock song, but I need a violin on it. And I don't know who that person is, but I need to find them.
Well, if anyone's listening to this and you play the violin and you're into what Keith's describing, then hit him up.
Yeah, thank you.
Let him know. Alrighty. And we're going to hit pause on this conversation for a quick second and mm-hmm. play everyone a single from Keith.
Yeah,
Uneasy cool. is, yeah, yeah. Uneasy is his most recent single about reminiscing on a past relationship, including all the good and all the bad.
Remember,
anybody just joining us, this is Hot Shots on Air, and tonight I'm speaking with the Canadian alt-rock singer-songwriter Keith Mosfett. So we just came back from playing Keith's recent single, Uneasy. How long did it take you to write that song, Keith?
I actually wrote that song 4 or 5 years ago. I sat on it for a long time. I probably took me like a few hours to write it, though. But then the bridge came to me when I moved to Amsterdam, and yeah, it was I shelved that song for a long time, and then I kind of wanted to start recording new music, and I brought that song back. So here it is.
Yeah. Did it change throughout the years? Does it look anything definitely like it did 4 years ago?
I think the bones are all there. The thing that I really added was I got some really great singers to do some backup vocals on it. And then the bridge was something I wrote when I moved here. And because it just needed a bridge, it was just something I kind of shelved because I was like, I wasn't like completely feeling it, but it's a great song and I'm happy the way it turned out.
And I definitely hear some other vocalists on that track. Who joined you for that recording?
My friend Faye, she sings in a band called Dear Omens, which are very kind of hardcore punk, where it's like drum, bass, and then she scream sings and keyboards. And then my friend Ida, who she knows through, they used to play in like church choir together, and then us three together, we do some cool harmonies on that.
Cool, yeah. So how did you pitch that to them? Was that like a group effort, or how did that
work? We just started jamming, and I write a lot of backup vocal ideas, and we do a lot of harmonies, and we just like, hey, let's just do a harmony here. And then we found the notes, and it was very natural.
Awesome. And what are the lyrics about?
It's kind of like post-breakup, you're not totally over someone, but you want to move on, even though you're not over someone, you're over it, but not over them. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was like a kind of a self-reflection. It was like, she made me feel terrible about myself. Mm-hmm. But I was still like really into her, but she made me feel terrible about myself. The lyrics are like, made me feel uneasy, heart is, the silver in my pockets can't pass all of your tests. So it's like, I had no money, so it wasn't good enough for her, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, pretty relatable. I think most people can relate to that.
Yeah. Yeah. You date someone who think they're better than you. Yeah. That's what I did.
Mm-hmm. How was that song recorded and who produced it?
I produced it, and we recorded it in a place called Lullaby Studios here in Amsterdam. It's completely done to tape, record everything on tape, record it there. And then we did some of the backup vocals here in my apartment. And then I mixed it with my friend Keith Gomez, who's a Portuguese Indian guy. And yeah, we him and I mixed it together in his studio apartment.
Cool. Do you often self-produce your music?
Always.
Cool. There we go.
Yeah, everything I usually record myself, or I'm usually the person at least setting things up, trying to find the sound that I want. I just listen to a lot of music. So I've been recording enough music in my time where I know some people, you go to a studio and some people are just liars. You want to take all your money, or I've been on record labels and people just don't want to treat you right. I don't really want to get a big loan from a record label and owe them $10,000, for something I could do myself. And I'd rather find my own sound, because ultimately I just want to create interesting art.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah, exactly.
And what do you hope your listeners will take away from Uneasy?
If you're if someone treats you badly, a partner treats you badly, it's okay to not be completely over them, but don't go back to them. You know, don't give in to the temptations. they did this, if they did this to you, don't give in to the temptation that they invite you over, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, at the end of this interview, we'll be playing The World is a Twirling Void, another single by Keith. And how long did it take you to write that song?
I wrote that song probably in 20 minutes. I wrote it at the beginning of the pandemic. It was probably the first week of the pandemic I wrote it. And for me, I grew up in a very chaotic household, chaotic life, my family and friends. And I watched the whole world kind of twirl, and people were, we were going to the grocery store, we're wearing like gloves and stuff and wash everything. I was completely fine with it. For me, I didn't skip a beat at all, but I watched everyone else lose their minds around it. And it's just about the, how many recessions, once in a lifetime recessions, once in a lifetime wars, once in a lifetime, everything our generation has been through. And that just like, that song was just, it's a self-reflection of that. It's just, how many times have millennials or Gen Z, I guess, too, I've just been, I have to deal with these once in a generation things, and we become numb to it at this point. I'm numb to all these recessions. I'm numb to it. And I think most people are too.
Mm-hmm. How was the process of writing those lyrics?
It was 20 minutes. It for a lot of my music in general, it was like, I need to get something emotionally off of my chest. Mm-hmm. And then it feels like I just have to get it out and it feels better. I have to take something, it's like taking a brick off of my chest and I put it somewhere else and I instantly feel better. Mm-hmm. And then I have this song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's never, then like I'll make tweaks and stuff to it. But the majority of it just comes naturally very quickly.
Mm-hmm. So it's almost like venting a little bit.
It's my therapy. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. How was that song recorded and who produced it?
I produced it, and I think I recorded the guitar in my apartment in Toronto, all the guitar bits and stuff, and a lot of the vocals, all the vocals in my apartment in Toronto. And then the drums were done by my friend Jack Victor in Toronto. He's like a Polish Toronto dude. And he was like my neighbor, and it was kind of a few months into the pandemic. And he's like, yo, like we're not doing anything with our lives. Come over and let's record the song. And we'd done a couple of songs together and we just made it happen. So, yeah.
Yeah. And what do you hope your listeners will take away from this song?
The world is always twirling into chaoticness and people are going to threaten us with nuclear weapons and there's going to be some sort of drought and don't lose hope. There's always some sort of chaos happening and yeah, don't lose hope.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have a favorite single of yours?
A favorite single? It's either It's You. I love It's You. Mm-hmm. It's It was just like a fun garage rock song with this cool kind of like a guitar solo in there. I was listening to like a lot of King Gizzard and stuff, but it's like, it's just a fun song. That or I've Got This Feeling, because it's just like.
Want to get social? Hit us up on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Indie1015FM.
The truth of human nature's time, our thoughts are nuts. Boy Scout training, well, it sure would have helped a lot. From space, our strange rock is simply a pale blue dot. Try not to lose your heart. Straight up, if I told you I was f***ed, what would you say? Look, all the stories in my mind that I've just made up. I save this for my therapist, my friends, and all my empty journal. Friends and all my empty journal pages. I'll burn, I'll burn, I'll burn up all the pages. I'll burn, I'll burn, I'll burn up all the pages. I'll burn, I'll burn, I'll burn up all the pages. Atmosphere changes how we learn.
changes how we look.
Could these conditions actually be self-inflicted, not a disease? Does it really matter? Soon I'll be a robot. Does it really matter? Soon I'll be a robot. Try not to lose your heart. Straight up, if I told you I was f***ed, what would you say, love? All the stories in my mind that I've just made up. Should I save this for my therapist, my friends, and all my empty journal? Friends and all my empty journal pages. I'll burn, I'll burn, I'll burn up all the pages. I'll burn, I'll burn, I'll burn up all the pages. I'll burn, I'll burn, I'll burn up all the pages. Truth of human nature's time of thoughts and nuts. Try not to lose your heart. Straight up, if I told you I was hooked, what would you say, love? All the stories in my mind that I've just made up. Should I say this for my therapist, my friends, and all my empty journal?
Jacket.
time to get up and rock it out. You're listening to Indie 101.5, Hamilton's home for alternative.
Protest by the